Blog Talk Radio.
The 2015 CONCACAF Gold Cup Post Game Show.
Everyone, and welcome to another post-game show for the United States men's national team, the CONCACAF Gold Cup post-game show, as the United States defeats Honduras by a slim margin of 2-1. Joining me later tonight will be Carter Krishnire from World Soccer Talk and Mr. Jake Dudinsky as we talk about this matchup. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, the truth of the matter is that this was not a stellar performance by the United States, but timely goals got them to take a good 2-goal lead until that big moment that Honduras comes out of nowhere and they pull out a big goal to really force the situation on the United States. And maybe, just maybe, as we get set here for, a game where we just got to say right now, the United States, I think they were lucky enough to get out of this one. You know, a win's a win, victory's a victory, obviously. But, you know, this is why the Gold Cup is such a difficult tournament when you're playing against sides that are very, very strong. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just got to say that you got to give Honduras a lot of credit. You got to give Honduras a lot of credit for coming in and just doing a job and trying to upset the United States. And they nearly do it. They nearly do it. And the United States, they will lead Group A with 3 points. You had the earlier match between Haiti and Panama. That ended as a 1-1 draw. And a good, I will say this, a good performance by Honduras. Maybe they deserved a little bit better. But once again, the United States, they are showing why they are one of the top nations of CONCACAF and why they did so well and why they've been doing so well and everything else going on. But I got to say, once again, it is just absolutely wonderful to see the United States going out there and just doing a job, as good of a job as possible, to get out there and to just try their best to go out and just play hard and doing the job that they needed to do. Was it a bit nerve-wracking at times? Absolutely. Absolutely. But once again, you just got to say that the United States, this is one of those moments where it was nerve-wracking. And after leading 2-0, Honduras pulled one back. And they just go ahead and do a job. And they just find a way to play hard, to play strong, and they go out there and they just do a job. You know, I think we're seeing Clint Dempsey playing the way he normally plays. I think to lighten his load, I think it was a smart move by Jurgen Klinsmann to remove the captain's armband from him. And you saw him being at his best. You saw him doing well out there. There's already, if you're watching the post-match thing on Fox Sports 1, United States with 3 points. Haiti and Panama draw 1-1, 1 point each. Honduras with zeros. And you know what? Not bad to start off. A negative one on the goal difference. But that's okay. We're not going to worry about it. We're not going to have a problem with it. It's all right. And you just got to say that for Honduras, let's be honest, for Honduras, you know what? It's not bad. It's not a bad performance. It's a very good performance. And I just think that right now, you got to say that for the United States, they have looked shaky. It's the opening round game. It's the opening match. And you just got to wonder what's going to happen when they take on Haiti over in Gillette Stadium on Friday night. Joining me right now, of course, my good friend Jake Dudinsky. Jake, what did you see from this first opening game for the United States in group play in Group A?
You know, truth be told, Dan, I'm not thrilled. I am not thrilled with what I saw. I saw a team that looked very stale in the first half, despite the goals. And throughout the game, I mean, honestly, you could make an argument, very easily could make that argument.
Absolutely. I agree with you there. There are certain, you know, there were certain moments in this game where I felt the United States did not look their best, backline included. I really thought Timmy Chandler had a horrible game. I thought Timmy Chandler did not look fresh. He did not look like he was concentrating hard enough. And some of his crosses just were not that solid.
You know, my concern here, and my biggest concern with this, is that you look at the quality of the opponents you're going to have to face in the Gold Cup. I mean, with our group, I think you could say Honduras was going to be a challenge. We knew it was going to be a close game. You know, you and I spoke earlier today about this exact subject, if you remember. And you told me pretty much that this scoreline, more or less, that we would win by one goal and that it would be close. But my biggest concern is that if we play like this against a Costa Rica or a Mexico, forget it. I mean, we gave away the ball. The back line was just horrendous. I mean, it was awful. And I can't figure out why, because leading up to this tournament, they've looked so good.
Yeah, they really did. Joining us right now from World Soccer Talk, Kartik Krishnayer. Kartik, I guess I would have to assume you agree with Jake's sentiments and mine. They won, but it wasn't a complete performance. It wasn't a good performance.
Yeah, they somehow won. I mean, Honduras' finishing is very poor. I mean, after watching last three and a half weeks of the Women's World Cup, and we saw a team that maybe they weren't firing on all cylinders in the group stage, but they were tactically sound. They didn't give the ball away cheaply. To watch a team tonight put on that same U.S. shirt and just technically very bad, shape was poor, midfield was run over, the back line was really bad, defenders out of position. And again, I think the finishing from guys like Andy Nahar, a player we're very familiar with here in the States, almost played for us, of course. Finishing from him wasn't very good, and some of the other Honduran players. It was a shocking performance. I mean, again, the scoreline looks okay. Honduras is one of your starter CONCACAF countries, but they were the better team. And I think I agree that you play a Costa Rica and you perform like this, you're probably going to lose. And when we face Costa Rica, we face Mexico, we'll be in the knockout stages. There were a lot of worrying signs tonight. It wasn't just one or two things. A lot of things that reminded us of the friendlies earlier in the year. I mean, the things that we saw in the first half also against the Dutch that it seemed like we had gotten over after halftime of that Holland game when we stormed back in that. And then obviously the 90 minutes, or at least 60 of the 90 minutes in Cologne against Germany. But a lot to be disappointed about from this performance. A lot to be worried about going into Haiti. Haiti's not going to be that difficult. Panama could be. Panama, I've seen Panama beat the United States in person in the Gold Cup in Tampa a few years ago. So, and we know Panama will be hungry given what happened 2 years ago in qualifying. Well, in the Gold Cup final also, but in qualifying, at the end of qualifying. So, This team's got to get better.
It really does, Kardik. And let me just say this. But go ahead, Jake. You go ahead and say what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Well, to piggyback on that, you know, I really don't understand what happened tonight, because I fully expected going into this game that the U.S. would be firing all cylinders. But again, I want to bring up something, is that we're going back to conceding late goals. We're back in this trend where the second half just seems to be fall apart territory. And, you know, even everybody on the field today just looked out of sync. I don't know whether it was just first game nerves, but you wouldn't really expect that in a gold, or whether it was more on the lines of just, you know, unorganized performance. I honestly can't place it, but something just looked off tonight, Dan.
Mm-hmm. And I will say this, it's a combination of everything. I thought the U.S. started off poorly. Honduras started off roaring. The USA got their goals, but at the same time, Honduras isn't afraid anymore to play against the United States, because everyone knows what to expect from the United States. And at the same time, and maybe Kardik will agree with me on this, you know, you have the former national team coach of Costa Rica running Honduras, and, you know, he's brought a lot of pep, a lot of energy to tell them, listen, the United States, you shouldn't fear them anymore, because we have as good enough players as the Americans do. So, you know, Pinto, who has done a lot of great things with Costa Rica until he lost that position and came to Honduras, I think he's just giving the same type of game plan to the Hondurans like he used to do with his country in Costa Rica, Kardik.
Yeah, he's had two good runs with Costa Rica, actually. And so he and this most recent run, obviously, they were unlucky maybe not to be in the World Cup semifinals. But who knows what happened. They play Argentina. Costa Rica really, hey, we think about this, and we know a lot of people knock the CONCACAF region. Costa Rica was not that far away from potentially being in a World Cup final last summer. So he did a great job, and obviously that was a big statement for our region. I mean, and I was disappointed they didn't get into that semifinal. I thought they had outplayed the Dutch in that game and then lost in penalties. But, yeah, look, his teams like to press high. We've seen that before. We've seen that when we've gone down to Saprissa and played against Costa Rica. They like to press high. They like to control tempo. And the other thing they do is they're organized at the back and they break quickly. So, for example, we've seen that when we played Costa Rica, where they'll have six guys behind the ball and it'll seem like they're defensive. But once they get possession, they'll push the ball wide and they run at you quickly. And today our wide defenders, Chandler and Fabian Johnson, weren't very good. Chandler was terrible, actually. And you're going to have to make that straight swap, bringing Brad Evans in, which I think kind of settled things a little bit on the right side, our right side of defense. And then DeAndre Yedlin is not a 90-minute player at this level. We saw that again today. You can't leave him out there for 90 minutes. Brooks Shea's another guy. He's not on this Gold Cup team, but Brooks Shea and DeAndre Yedlin are very similar players. You can't play them for 90 minutes at this level. And Yedlin was very poor in the second half, giving even the foul he gave away in stoppage time. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, you don't want to let a guy go, but maybe you just let a guy go at that time. Why do you foul a guy in a dangerous position in the third minute of 3 minutes of stoppage time, in a position where the guy could potentially score? He gets a free kick. Now, he hit it into the wall, but I mean, that's just again, a lack of match awareness. There are a lot of issues that Jake and I can go through from this game, I'm sure, we want to nitpick, which I guess we will for the next 20 minutes.
Well, we're going to nitpick anyway. We're going to nitpick anyway, Kardik, but the point is that the United States, while they got away with this result, it's a positive result, but the performance does not match the positiveness of this result. That's the thing. It's you get your goals, you get out of town, and then you get ready for the next game, but you nearly leave with a point, because while they did get three, they almost lost two. Right, Jake?
I think they're lucky to have gotten anything. If it wasn't for a lack of Honduras' ability to finish, I think they could have put up three or four, maybe more than that, because if you look at it, I'm looking at some of these stats. We got outshot. I think it was by a big margin. I mean, even if I think we controlled possession 51% of the time, but it sure as heck didn't look that way. And again, it was just such sloppy passing. And I don't want to nitpick about the officiating this early in the tournament, but I don't know if it was just this particular guy, but this guy seemed to let literally everything go. I don't know if you guys noticed that, or if it was just me, but there were some questionable things that I think he let slide.
Well, you know, the referee in this match, Mr. Cesar Ramos, apparently this is his first time in the Gold Cup officiating. So, of course, there are some people that are saying, you know, if this is his first time officiating a Gold Cup match, you know, what's he doing in here now? Maybe he should have done a lower level match. Who knows? We don't know. They have to replace, of course, some of the other referees from Mexico that have done a good job of officiating USA games in the Gold Cup. But Kartik, outside of the officiating, which I didn't have a problem with that much, I really didn't have a problem, because if the USA would have played a little bit better and done a little bit more, shall we say, better defending, I think that everything would have been a lot better for them, and maybe we could say something here and there. Who knows? Whoop, did we lose Kartik? Yes, we did. He'll call back in. Don't worry. But go ahead, Jake. I mean, if there he goes. Okay, Kartik's back. And Kartik, before we lost you, you know, we're talking about the official here that was running the match. I didn't have a problem with him. I thought the USA just didn't have, they just did not have a good attack plan, or they just didn't seem to be interested in their attack, their defense.
The official was poor. He was poor for both teams. I mean, I saw Pito was complaining about the officiating at the end of the game. He didn't do Honduras or the U.S. any favors. He was just, it's CONCACAF official, right? I mean, one thing we could say is that they did a bad job, but there's consistency in that. I mean, there's no outright bias towards one team or another. They were just, there were a couple fouls that that should have been called on Honduran players that weren't. There were, I think, two offsides on our guy, including that one on Ducey at the end, which they missed. There was a call against one of our guys, against Chandler, that Brad Friedel was saying, gosh, you know, if they gave Brooks a yellow earlier, that's definitely a yellow, and they didn't call a foul. So, so Chandler got away with that, but Jurgen had seen enough at that point. He yanked him a couple minutes later. But, the officiating was poor, but we were terrible. Our touch was bad today. The passing was very loose. This is the first time I've seen Bradley and Beckerman play together and play so poorly together. The combination play wasn't good between them. The spacing wasn't good. I was surprised that Bradley was out of position a lot, which one thing you can usually count on with Michael Bradley, even if his passing is off, is that his positioning sense, again, being the son of a coach, is quite good. Terrible performance, and again, Honduras' finishing was poor because Honduras should have scored three or four goals. I can think of just offhand, three, four.
At a minimum.
They could have scored five or they could have scored five goals.
And yeah. I think even Guzan had some questionable decisions coming off his line, and it just looked like they weren't ready to play.
Jeez.
Like I could not believe what I was watching. I mean, it was almost as if they thought this was a friendly, or they weren't taking it seriously, because they just looked like they didn't care. And it was a combination of, it was almost like a comedy of errors. Like, we're lucky to have gotten 3 points, let alone we should have probably gotten none. And as I said, after watching the Women's World Cup, I'm not necessarily 100% sold on the group stage anymore. But I hope this was just a situation of jitters and maybe underestimating the opponent. But I honestly can't say that I know that that's what it was at this point.
Absolutely, guys. I have to agree with you there. I mean, you know, we always talk about these Gold Cup games like, you know, getting out of the group stage is, you know, easy as pie. And I'll say this, Kartik, CONCACAF has grown up. I mean, there's no more an easy match. Maybe Haiti's going to be an easy match, but you can't take them lightly either. You got to put your foot on the gas and take them out. I mean, let's be honest right now. Everything's improved, not just within the U.S. and Mexico, but in Central America. Jamaica seems to have come back from the dead. We'll see how Trinidad Tobago will look in these next group games the next couple of days. But let's be honest right now, guys, even in World Cup qualifying, there's not an easy match anymore in this confederation, Kardik.
Yeah, Jamaica doesn't have necessarily their full 18. They played a lot of guys at the Copa. Some of those guys have gone back to their clubs. Some of them are based in Europe, and the European clubs weren't going to release them for both tournaments. So I don't know that Jamaica is going to be terribly competitive in the Gold Cup. But that's the danger of playing in two tournaments. I mean, we've learned that. We learned that when we played in Copa in 2007. We learned that when we played in Confederations Cup in 2009 and then took really a bad team to the Gold Cup and somehow limped our way to the final and then just got smashed. So I don't know that Jamaica is going to be that strong in this tournament. Trinidad is kind of they're kind of weak at this point. Haiti, though, who we play next, they have some interesting players, some guys I've watched in MLS and in NASL, including James Marceline with Fort Lauderdale, who played pretty well today for them. They gave us a game a couple of years ago in that World Cup I was talking about, where we had a B team where we were fortunate. I think Stuart Holden scored right at the death to get us a draw.
Yep.
They have some players that could cause us problems. I mean, if we're going to give the ball away like we did today, they might be able to take advantage of it, and they might be able to snatch a draw. And then against Panama, that's not going to be an easy game for all the reasons we talked about. Our passing has to get better. Our spacing has to get better. I think, again, I would say that the four guys on the back line were all pretty poor today. Maybe Alvarado wasn't as bad as Brooks was. Brooks was terrible. He was out of position a lot, and he was making bad decisions. Guzan wasn't particularly – Guzan made some nice saves. Guzan's always a good – but I agree with Jake. I mean, some of the decisions he made to come off his line. Really lucky he didn't get punished, especially on that one where he came way out. And, luckily for him, it kind of deflected off his foot and went over and for a corner. I mean, it very easily could have gone into his own goal because he came off a little late, and he didn't catch the guy cleanly. He was lucky he didn't get he didn't foul the Honduran player. I mean, it was just kind of reckless. So he didn't play well, and I think we missed Alejandro Bedoya today. I would expect him to start the next game. The kind of pace and tempo he brings to the midfield, maybe Bedoya and Zeus, you start the next game when we go back to we end the experimentation. Although I thought Zardes was okay today. I didn't think he was.
I thought Zardes played out well too.
Yeah,
I thought was great.
I
thought he worked well with the ball. I mean, you talk about that second half where he was helping out the defenders and he stole the ball off the forward, and you know he's just fighting, battling everything, and he found a way to help clear the ball. I thought Zardes actually had a great game today. Jake, what did you think? Jake?
What did you say? No,
okay,
I got
there
you.
Go.
I missed it. What's the question?
No, the question is about Zardes. I thought he had a great game.
Yeah, I thought he did too. I thought if we're going to talk about a bright spot, that would be it.
I thought Bradley was also a bright spot. I thought Michael Bradley was also a bright spot in this game too. I thought
Bradley
service
was okay. But if we're talking about as a team collectively, there wasn't much to like. Really quickly on Haiti, Haiti was able to get a draw with Panama today.
That's
so,
right.
So I'm not entirely sure that Haiti's going to be an easy game at this point either.
I know. That's going to be the big trick, isn't it, guys? Because Haiti is going to be one of those teams where they're still growing and they're still building since the earthquake, of course. You know, everything's been haphazard down there. They need a lot of help, you know, not just financially, but politically as well, unfortunately. But the thing is that their national team, their players, it still hasn't really sunk in or it hasn't clicked. There's been some great moments from Haiti. And I think Kardik can attest to see what he's done. I mean, Kardik, even the Red Bulls with their USL2 team, Derek Etienne, who's not on this Haiti roster for this Gold Cup, will be soon, depending on if it's going to be in 2 years or the next or the next one after that, because he's been lights out for the USL2 Red Bull team.
Yeah, Haiti, they haven't recovered from the earthquake, is correct. I mean, they were at a point right at the time of the earthquake. 2009, we talked about how they pushed the U.S. They had a decent Gold Cup. They were really kind of, they had their players scattered. They had a couple guys in MLS. They had several guys in USL and second USL 2 and 3. That was before NASL, of course. And they had guys all over in our system, the U.S. system. And then earthquake happened. They ended up having to shift their national team here to Florida, where I am. They played all their games in Fort Lauderdale. They tried to place their national team in USL just to get them games, which wasn't permitted by FIFA. So they took a step back because they couldn't play at home. I mean, they literally could not play games at home for like two or three years. So they're just getting back to that level that they were at in 2009. But as Jake said, they gave Panama a game today. They drew them, which was a really kind of a shock result to start this tournament. And they'll be ready for us. And no one's going to be scared of us after the way we played today. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Let's get some statistics here from this match, of course. Both sides were booked once for the United States. Two goals, of course, from Clint Dempsey, both by Clint Dempsey, three shots on target. None were off the woodwork, none were off target. But here's for Honduras, guys. Of course, they scored one goal, two shots on target. None were off the woodwork, six off target out of nine shots. Six were off target by Honduras, five total shots for the U.S., none were off target. But the thing is that it's just amazing to see that Honduras, who played better, Jake, unfortunately, they just could not convert more than just one chance.
Well, in our case, it's fortunately. I mean, as far as that goes, I think we should, again, and we can say this 10 billion in one different ways, but the fact of the matter was, and we keep reiterating it, we looked awful. I mean, there's no real way to sugarcoat this. The fact is, had Honduras hit the net, this conversation that we're having right now would be very, very different. The back line, and I feel like we're a broken record at this point, but I mean, it was horrendous. The whole team, with the exception of a few people that we noted, just looked like they were either unprepared, not ready, or just underestimated Honduras. Confederation, as you said, is broke. You can't underestimate anybody. You can't go into a game thinking that you're just going to walk all over them. As we've learned in previous games, looking at the past World Cups, or for that matter, past Gold Cups, the fact of the matter is now is that CONCACAF is a very competitive confederation, and everybody needs to be treated with respect, or you're going to have what happened tonight, where you have a situation where the team just didn't look like they were ready to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Kardik, we've seen this confederation grow tremendously from start to finish here, even with the corruption scandal that did plague this confederation late May, early June, just a couple of months ago, 1 or 2 months ago. We are for sure that this confederation is finally growing into a competitive confederation. Maybe not the level of UEFA or CONMEBOL, but still, you don't know what you're going to get when you're going to face these CONCACAF sides from within.
Yeah, Mexico almost didn't qualify for the World Cup, right? They were 2 minutes away from not qualifying. Let's not forget that. And then they had to go through a playoff, so they still finished fourth. Honduras finished ahead of them. Honduras beat them at Azteca. Costa Rica finished ahead of them. Costa Rica beat them both in Azteca and in San Jose. So the confederation has certainly gotten better, and today's news that they're cutting ties with Craft Sports, we get into that another time. I think that that's a very positive sign, a healthy sign that the confederation is growing up. But this tournament is still a tournament played in the United States. It's still a tournament where the United States is the home team. They're comfortable now. I know we talk about the fact that when the U.S. plays Mexico, there are more Mexican fans, but they're also playing in the United States. They're getting up in a hotel room. It's not like playing in Mexico. It's not like playing in Central America. It's not like even the drive to the game. It's not all that stuff. Maybe the fans, it's one thing, but these are home games, okay? And if we perform like this in a home World Cup qualifier, even when we take 3 points, if we perform like this in a – you just think about this. Let's think about playing Honduras, you know, because Honduras is always in that final, although we're not doing the Hex this year, but this cycle. But Honduras is always in that final round of qualifying. We always play them. If we played like this in a home qualifier against Honduras, which wasn't held in Washington or Chicago where there are all these Honduran fans, it was held in Dallas where the crowd is 90%, 95% U.S., we would be humiliated. We would be ripping this team, saying, is this team going to qualify for the World Cup? Are we going to have to go play the Oceania, fourth place, the winner of Oceania, or next time it'll be Asia? Are we going to have to go play the last qualifier from Asia in a playoff because we were just bad? So it's alarming, but maybe it's also the cycle. Maybe it's we're year one in a 4-year World Cup cycle, and even though Jurgen has reached back to get some experience back in this team, he's brought Wando back. He thought about bringing DeMarcus Beasley back. He tried to bring Brad Davis back, who got hurt. Brad Evans is back in the team. Zusi's back in the team. Maybe that's it. I mean, maybe it was because he's reintegrated these players that were core players a year ago, but for the last, at least in the calendar of 2015, have not had a role in the national team. Maybe that's what accounts for this. Maybe it's because it's year one in a cycle. That's the only explanation I have, because if we played like this in a qualifier, we would be going crazy tonight about how bad we were.
Yep, absolutely. I cannot disagree with you there, Kardec. You are absolutely right. If this was a performance in a World Cup qualifier, forget it. And that's the one thing. I was talking with John Jagu, Kardec, who covers Liga MX and Mexico's national team on Big Soccer. He was saying it's time to do a rotation. It's time to get rid of the once every 2 years. And, Jake, I'll get your opinion as well. You first, obviously, Jake. It's time to get rid of the once every 2 years Gold Cup, and it's time to start rotating the Gold Cup to different countries. Maybe go to Mexico. Maybe go to Honduras. Maybe go to Costa Rica. Go to one of the Caribbean islands. Go to Canada. Maybe it's time to do a rotation because I don't mind it being in the United States, you know, once every 2 years, fine. But the truth of the matter is it just doesn't feel like it's proper enough because there's no rotation. And we need a rotation of nations or islands within this confederation because now you're seeing the Central American side building stadiums. Obviously, Costa Rica has the new national team stadium, and you can play it there and you can play at some of these other stadiums. You're just going to have to, you know, fix it up a little bit, and then off you go. What do you think, Jake?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think that if we're going to go that route, we need to make sure that those countries have the infrastructure and the available lodging to make sure it's comfortable for the players as well as that the players are safe. You know, a Costa Rica, I wouldn't mind seeing it go there. Mexico obviously has the stadiums. But after that, I mean, you're looking at some of these countries like a Honduras, which crime rate has gone up recently. I mean, these are things that while we would love to obviously see a rotation, you got to take into effect some of these other things that are going on in these countries.
And, Kardec, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the time for a rotation has come, but I agree with Jake. I think the rotation is not going to be amongst all these CONCACAF countries, and you can't have a tournament in Honduras. You can't have a tournament in El Salvador. You can't have a tournament in Panama. You can't have a tournament in Mexico. Mexico's hosted the World Cups, obviously. They just recently hosted the U-17 World Cup or U-20 World Cup. I can't remember which one it was. You can obviously have a tournament in Canada. They just hosted the Women's World Cup, although I would hope if we do a tournament in Canada, the games aren't all on turf, but that's a whole other issue.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, right. So you could host it in those three countries, so you could rotate between those three countries and maybe
Costa Rica.
A joint Caribbean bid. But I think the time for rotation has come, so yes, but I don't think the rotation would ever be more than those three countries. Maybe Costa Rica, yeah. Maybe four, but definitely those three. So it's still going to rotate back. It would be interesting, really, to have Canada host this tournament because obviously the U.S. and Mexico are the elite teams traditionally in CONCACAF, although now I think Costa Rica, even if you look at just player for player, Costa Rica has reached the same level as the U.S. and Mexico. But it would be good to kind of have Canada, who's an outside the nation. They didn't win the one Gold Cup, but they never get past the next final round of World Cup qualifying. There's a growing interest in the sport in that country because of MLS and NASL, and now they want to start their own Canadian league. And obviously, they had a very successful Women's World Cup hosting it. Maybe that's where you take the tournament in 2017. Although I think maybe rotation is less important than making this a once every 4 year event, because the once every 2 year event I think is what causes some of these issues, and that's been done for commercial reasons. But maybe you change it now to you play it in 2019 or 2017, and then you move it to 2020 and you run it alongside the Euros that summer, and you play it every 4 years. Copa did this. Remember, Copa America used to be every 2 years, and then they transitioned Copa to being an every 4 year tournament in the 90s, in the late 90s. I guess it was the early 2000s, right? They had a Copa in 99, they had a Copa in 2001, and then they switched it to 04, and then 07, and then 11, 15. So that was how they kind of adjusted it to from 2 to 3 to 4, and that's probably what we're going to have to do. Asia did the same thing, right? They went from 2 to 3 to 4 in order to,
yep,
to kind of do that.
Yep, absolutely. That's what they that's what happened there, and, you know, obviously the situation now is, well, you know, the only thing that's every 2 years or back-to-back years is the African Cup of Nations. They have two tournaments back-to-back years or once every 2 years. I don't know why they do that. I guess they need the money desperately. Who knows? But that's the situation. I guess that'll be for another conversation at another time.
Yeah,
we'll try.
You know, obviously, one good thing CONCACAF has done is we used to play the Gold Cup way back when, in that same calendar thing in January and February. And the African Cup of Nations just messes up the European club season. I mean, it really does. I mean, I know the summer is hot in Africa, but the FIFA's got to do something about that, because these clubs are losing these players. And that used to happen here in with the Gold Cup, and then that's when CONCACAF in 2003 or 5, one of those years, moved it to the summer finally, and it's been a summer tournament since 2003, I think, we moved it to the summer.
Yeah, yep, that's when it was moved to the summer. I was going to say, we'll talk to Colin Udo from Nigeria, who has a better discussion about that. He knows more. That's his backyard, Kartik. The entire nation of Africa for Colin Udo, that's his backyard, as we know. More statistics here from this match, of course. Assists, both 1-1, fouls, 17-11 for Honduras. Ball possession, of course, U.S. in percent, 51% to 49% advantage. To both sides were offsides twice. 8-2 on corners for Honduras. We don't have to worry about the passes, obviously, but the accuracy for passes, 77% for the U.S., 75% for Honduras. So Honduras just behind by a 2% margin, I guess. But still, guys, once again, statistics does not show the type of game the United States had, and it was poor, Jake, once again. And Honduras looked like they were unlucky to get any form of points in this one.
You know, again, the only way to put it, again, bluntly, and again, I feel like a broken record, is this team played atrociously. They really did. I mean, it was, to put it in perspective, as you guys said, if this was a World Cup qualifier, the tone that we would be having right now would be completely different. We would probably be screaming, demanding for people to be fired, demanding complete lineup changes. Like this being a Gold Cup, it's not as big of an outrage that we played as we did. But had this been a World Cup qualifier on home soil, everybody I think in this call would agree that the tone would be different. That being said, maybe, and I'm being optimistic here, they were just really nervous.
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, you know, the United States, it's a slow start. Or as I know you're a big wrestling fan, Jake. I'll give you, and Kartik might agree with me on this, and I'll say it right now, Jake, just for you. You know, the old Greg the Hammer Valentine shtick. He really needs more than just 15 minutes to get really warmed up. What do you think about that, Kartik? I think that's what they needed more than the old Greg the Hammer Valentine shtick.
I mean, I don't understand why our guys would be nervous in the Gold Cup. But, yeah, I mean, maybe we were just really nervous. This is the Gold Cup, for heaven's sakes, on home soil. This isn't the World Cup qualifier. This isn't the Confederations Cup. This isn't a World Cup, okay? Or this isn't a friendly against Germany in Germany, where, by the way, we just won. This is a game against Honduras in Dallas in the Gold Cup in the group stage. There's nothing to be nervous about. The U.S. never loses games like this. And we still haven't lost a game like this. However, I don't remember us playing this poorly. There was a game against Haiti here in Miami in 2000 in the opening rounds of the Gold Cup where we played this poorly. I remember that. But then it was a largely pro-Haitian crowd. So I don't remember us playing – I should say this. I don't remember us playing this poorly in front of an overwhelmingly pro-American crowd on – home soil in this competition. Yes, we've had World Cup qualifiers where we've been nervous and we haven't come out well. There was a game against El Salvador qualifying for 2010 in Salt Lake where we were just really struggling through that game. But, no, this was pretty alarming. And maybe my excuse here is going to be it's year one of a four-year cycle. Jurgen has experimented with his squad. The guys who were instrumental to the victories in Holland and in Germany, the two massive victories, just incredible victories in the history of this program. I mean, two of the six or seven most improbable results in the history of our program happened last month with those back-to-back wins over the Netherlands and Germany, two superpowers in this sport, two World Cup semifinalists last year, right? Traditional powers. Because we didn't have the Jordan Morrises and the Bobby Woods and Danny Williams and the guys who were really instrumental to turning those games, and Mix wasn't on the pitch today. Mix Diskerud, who had a really good game in Germany, wasn't particularly good in the game against Holland, but those guys weren't on the pitch maybe, and we reintegrated some other players, although Deuce got both goals, so maybe we can't blame him. Maybe that was it. Maybe try to push some guys back in. And the one guy who was really good in both those games that was really good today was Zardes, who we talked about earlier. And that was carryover from Zardes is a guy that I know our friend Neil Blackman was saying, God, this is the most unskilled player we have in our national team. Well, why does Jurgen keep picking him? And we finally saw against Holland and then against Germany why he was in the team. And why he was one MLS guy, he flew to Europe for those games. So there was carryover for him. He was still very good. But then all these other players, the Timothy Chandler didn't play well in either of those games, and that carried over to this game. Bobby Johnson was good, was pretty good against Holland, but wasn't very good against Germany. That kind of carried over to today. John Brooks, even though he scored a goal against Holland, was terrible in that game. That kind of carried over to today. And the guys who really were good beyond Zardes in those games, and Bradley didn't have an off day today, but beyond Zardes and Bradley didn't play today. So maybe that's why we saw a completely different U.S. team. So that's my excuse. Because we're
that's
looking
fine.
To make excuses, right? We're looking to justify why we played so poorly.
Yeah, I guess we are. Well, let me throw this out at you both, and Carter, you can answer first, and then Jake. Brian Dunseth on Twitter was answering a Twitter follower of his. The Twitter follower said this. The Twitter follower said we created less chances than we did against Germany in that friendly. That should matter a little bit. And Dunseth says, completely different games. Germany played wide open. Honduras sit back with numbers and countered. Carrick, do you agree with that? And then Jake.
Yeah, like I said earlier, that's the way Pinto's teams play. That's the way his Costa Rican teams always play, right? They would sit back, but when you turn the ball, they're not one of these teams that sits back. We see teams that bunker that we play against in CONCACAF that sit back and then they return the ball to you once they clear it. Honduras under Pinto, like Costa Rica under Pinto, is not like that. They win possession after they sit like six or seven guys behind the ball and then they break quickly and they create scoring chances, which is why they had more shots than us in this game. So yeah, it was a completely different game. Germany was more open and it was a friendly. However, the giveaway, the losing of possession, the way Pinto's teams play, as I said, they press high, okay? And if they don't gain possession, then they drop back pretty rapidly and stick six, seven guys behind the ball at a minimum. We were either dispossessed regularly when they pressed high in those first 25 minutes before we got the goal, remember, we got the goal on a set piece after we had basically been run off the pitch for the first 25 minutes. So they either pressed high to get the ball from us, or they sat seven guys behind the ball to get the ball from us. So I agree with Brian Gunsith. It was a different game, but we didn't respond to the different tactics well enough to justify getting 3 points in this game, quite frankly.
Jake, your thoughts?
Just to reiterate, different games. The only difference is in Germany game, we noticed tactically what they were doing and we adapted. And because of that, we were able to win. This game, it seems like we were steadfast on doing whatever we started with, regardless of whether or not it was working. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those situations where looking back on it, I'm sure the team will realize that this wasn't their best game. I'm interested to see what Jurgen and the players are going to say about this, if they haven't already, because I feel like the comments should be something on the lines of that they got a win, but they weren't happy with how they played. I mean, at least I hope that's what they will say.
Absolutely, guys, and we'll see what happens. Once again, everyone, the United States, they defeat Honduras by a final of 2-1, both goals scored by Clint Dempsey. But the performance did not match the result in this one. Great result, just a terrible performance. And gentlemen, let's preview this game against Haiti again. Looking at the roster card, Stuart Cias, the keeper for the Silverbacks, is on the roster. From the USL, Charlotte Independence, Michak Jerome, the defender. And we also, like you said, we have some other players from Haiti on other rosters in the NASL, like Pascal Million, Jacksonville Armada, James Marcelin from Fort Lauderdale. You also have from the USL, you got Sebastian Turier from the Charleston Battery, the only one that's from Haiti on in MLS, Sonny Mustivar from Sporting Kansas City. Everyone else is either in French Ligue 1 or other leagues that speak French.
Yeah, and this is an important thing to note about this Haiti team. Haiti doesn't have, maybe they have one or two players still playing in the domestic league. In some of the past competitions Haiti's entered, they've had half their team in the domestic league and then half their team in the U.S. lower division. Now they've got some guys playing in Europe, not many, but they have a few. And then they've got a bunch of guys in the U.S. lower divisions, and the U.S. lower divisions are at a much higher level than they were then. So NASL now is better than, it's significantly more competitive than the old USL first division was. And USL, which is the third division now, is more competitive than the old USL 2 was. So that's, and you mentioned James Marcelin. Julie Stewart Binks from Fox actually reached out to me about him yesterday. Knowing that I cover Fort Lauderdale, and was asking questions about him because she said that he's going to start. He's the guy the manager has been talking up. She had just arrived from Vancouver. This is, by the way, I give Fox, I bash on Fox a lot, as I think of so many of us do. I have to give them credit for this quick turnaround. They were in Vancouver covering the U.S., this historic victory on Sunday night. People like Julie Stewart Things, Rob Stone, Alexi Lawless, Eric Winalda. When JSB reached out to me, it was Monday afternoon. She was already in Dallas. So they left Vancouver, and they were right to work on this Gold Cup. But as I was saying about Haiti, she reached out to me specifically about Marcelin, and he's a really good player. I mean, he's a guy that plays in the center of midfield but can push wide. He's quick enough. He's not that quick, but he's quick enough, strong body player, and his touch is very good. And the thing we found today about the U.S. is that a lot of our midfielders didn't quite have the touch we thought they did. And you get a guy like Yedlin, who's not used to playing 90 minutes. He's used to playing 30 minutes and hasn't been playing at the club level since January. I mean, he got a couple late-game runouts for Spurs at the end of the Premier League season, but I think this season he's going to get loaned out somewhere, Derby or Norwich or places. And, like, you get guys in the U.S. who are going to give the ball away to a guy like Marcelin and some of these other midfielders that Haiti has, it's a dangerous proposition. I have to believe that we will play better. I'm not sure what the guys are going to say publicly. Jake mentioned he'd like to see some reaction publicly. I know privately Jurgen Klinsmann is going to be saying, WTF to these guys. This was a horrible performance. There's been no game, competitive game, you know, World Cup qualifier or World Cup match or Gold Cup in 2013 since Jurgen took over, that where we've looked quite this out of sorts. Now, we didn't play well for much of the game against Ghana in the World Cup. We certainly were outplayed by Belgium, but we didn't look this out of sorts, I think. And there was no qualifier in 2013 where we looked this out of sorts. And then, obviously, in the 2013 Gold Cup. So this is really the first competitive game under Jurgen Klinsmann. And we've had friendlies where we looked terrible, right, including many in 2015. But this is the first competitive game under Jurgen Klinsmann where we have not looked motivated. We've looked disinterested. We look like we don't have a plan. And so I'm thinking this sort of performance, which would open us up to potentially being drawn by Haiti and potentially losing to Panama, quite honestly, with this kind of performance, I don't think we'll see this sort of performance, terrible performance from the U.S. again in this tournament. At least I hope not.
Same here. Go ahead, Jake.
You know, again, I really just want to reiterate everything that was pretty much just said, which is that I highly, highly doubt they will play this horrendously against Haiti and Panama. What I honestly believe happened tonight is that a bunch of unknown factors that we currently don't know about, whether it be lack of awareness or readiness to play, or underestimating Honduras, or whether it just be the overwhelmingness of the women winning the World Cup. Maybe that played a part in it. I don't know. But I think they'll be ready against Haiti. If nothing else, I think they're going to be fueled by how poorly they played tonight, and I think that will motivate them to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, that's the one thing that we have to take a look at and say that they should be aware of what they did, and hopefully they're not going to poo-poo it, and that they're going to go out and have and hopefully have a better performance. That's the idea. That's the hope. That's what we are going to hope to see. And I really do believe that Jurgen Klinsmann is going to give him a swift kick in the rear, like he should. And hopefully, we won't have any more of these issues with these poor starts. But once again, it's a situation where, you know, if this is a World Cup qualifier, like Kardik said, like you said, Jake, you know, this would be a big, big problem, and they might be behind the eight ball. Let's not forget, Kardik, the road to Brazil in the final round of qualifying, they started in Honduras. And after a Clint Dempsey goal, and then all of a sudden an equalizer came, but the late goal that they conceded, poor defense, that started my questioning of, is Jurgen Klinsmann the man to run this national team? And obviously things changed right away, but that opening final round of qualifying game in Honduras, that was the big WTF moment for everyone.
Yeah, Timothy Chandler was particularly bad in that game. We didn't see him for the rest of the qualifying cycle. He returned for the World Cup, but that was a poor performance. That was a loss that I think kind of got us focused. Brian Strauss's very controversial article about Klinsmann and the players' views of Klinsmann came out around that time. I think it may have come out right after that game, which got the players didn't really react to it other than Michael Bradley, who, of course, is the son of a coach. And I mean, you could see it one of two ways, because he's, of course, the son of the man who got fired for Klinsmann to replace him. But Michael Bradley was very angry about the article, and I remember him saying, any player who speaks this way about one of our coaches ought not to be in the national team, because Strauss had used a lot of anonymous sources, saying certain players, but not naming them, obviously, to protect them. So that got Bradley all fired up, but it didn't really get the rest of the team fired up, and we went to Honduras and lost. And then we had the snow game in Costa Rica, and we've been fine in competitive matches since. As I say, we've had some stickers and friendlies, but we never really look out of sorts in a competitive match. Look, we got beat badly by Belgium. Even though we got that extra time, Wando could have won the game for us. But we got outplayed by Belgium. But Belgium, if you look player for player, I mean, their guys, their 22nd guy would probably start for us. So we haven't had a game like this against a team that we should beat and we should control the tempo and against. And Honduras' best player is Aguirre. Celtic being released him for this World Cup, for this Gold Cup, because they've got some Champions League qualifying coming up, UEFA Champions League qualifying, although we also have that same similar situation with Jeff Cameron, who's one of our better field players, or at least at the club level is one of our better field players, and we could have used him in central defense today. But we weren't facing even a Honduras team with their best player, and Palacios also injured, so two of their better players, and we just didn't look right. So my thinking is you'll see some squad rotation for the next game. I think you'll see Zusi or Bedoya, and I agree we'll probably keep Zardes in the lineup. He gave a good 90 minutes today. Maybe Altidore or Dempsey sits in the next game to give them a spell. Maybe Altidore coming off the injury. Maybe he only was able to go about 58 minutes today. Maybe he doesn't start on Friday. Then you also see a situation where there's some rotation on the back line. Brad Evans gets a start for the Timothy Chandler. Maybe you see Tim Ream start instead of John Brooks. Alvarado was, as I said, he was better than the other guys. He really wasn't very good. Maybe you see someone else at left back, Greg Garza at left back. Obviously, DeMarcus Beasley is available, or Greg Shea is available to call in for the knockout stages when we get there. So I think you're going to see some squad rotation. That's the one thing I would look for on Friday, especially with the quick turnaround, the travel. That's one thing I hate about the Gold Cup is that they play in venues across the U.S., which is basically across the continent, and you get a three-day turnaround. It's not the Women's World Cup. FIFA was as much as I criticize FIFA, they were good with the scheduling, considering how big Canada was. They kept teams in the same venue for multiple games in the group stage so that they didn't have like we were in Winnipeg for two consecutive games because the travel is enormous in that country, so you don't want a team constantly traveling. Even though during the Men's World Cup they didn't do that, but they did make those allowances for Canada. The Gold Cup doesn't do that, so we're gone. I mean, we're probably out of Dallas tomorrow morning, and yep. On to the next venue, and then Friday we turn around after that and we got to go for Monday. So it's I think you'll see squad rotation also because of the travel, not just because of the poor performance.
Yep, I agree with you there. Go ahead, Jake. Anything to add on to that?
Not particularly. I mean, I think that sums it up pretty well. You got to stop letting him go first. He keeps saying everything.
Because he's the senior correspondent.
I'm aware of that. But he's leaving me with nothing to say. I mean, I might as well just start pulling things out of thin air. Like, I think aliens are going to invade the Magic and Petey because I said so. It's going to happen. But no, in
it's
all seriousness.
Yeah,
you can write that down. It's going to happen, just like the Red Bulls are going to win at MLS Cup. Oh, sorry. Couldn't resist.
Well, at least
anyway.
We're going to the quarterfinals.
Okay, you know what? You really want to do this? you really don't want to do this. The Open Cup is
you
for
start,
people
hey,
who don't
hey,
win MLS
Jake,
Cup.
Jake, you started it, and now I didn't have to finish it, so tough.
Yeah, okay. In defense, the Open Cup is for people that don't win MLS Cups.
So what does that mean that DC United that won it twice then? Does that mean that you don't care about them either?
Well, that means I don't particularly care about this year because we're going to win the supporters' share.
Oh, see, that's a DC guy for you right there. I don't care about the Open Cup this year, but whatever we do, I want to go for it. So you're just basically double talk on your own thing.
Kardik, let me explain my positioning here, okay? Ben
no,
Olsen.
not on this show. We'll do that for another show.
Daniel, what is it, like 14 trophies to one? So I think
he's
got
Hey, maybe
one.
So. Hey, Cardiff, at least I can respect it. I don't like it when you got a DC fan telling, yeah, we don't need the Open Cup this year. No, I'm sorry.
Well, we don't. But look, Dan, look at it. Look at it from this perspective. We don't want our starters to get hurt.
And this is my perspective, guys. I got to call the show. But thanks again for being on, and we'll have you on another time, guys.
All right,
so
thanks for having me.
All right. Hey, Kardik, I'm going to give you a buzz after I close the show. But for Jake Dudinsky and for Kardik Krishnire, This is Daniel Feuerstein. This has been the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. As the United States, it was a great result, just not a good performance. They defeat Honduras by final of 2-1. Have a good night, and we'll talk to you on Friday. Enjoy your football.